Welcome to the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name is James.
And I'm Drew Grizzick. How's it going, James?
It's going
pretty great.
I was going to say great.
Oh, really?
I was going to say
gonna change
it's going
it up
great.
This week?
Yeah, I was going to change it up because I know that I would be, you know, from last week. Although last week, there was no intro. There was a depressed me giving a little intro saying the show was lost.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So what episode are we in now?
We're on 45.
45?
46?
And I guess in 45 episodes, last time was 45. That was our first episode where we actually had like a technical thing. So that's not too bad.
And I'm blaming it on the cheap USB stick that I brought. So I brought the nice one this time, which I always bring. So that was the only difference. I changed the USB stick. And I think when it was saving, it was taking forever. And I was going to open a new window to start the next recording. We only have so many hours, right, to record. Mm-hmm. And it just, I just saw the thing in the, you know, the brackets pop up, not responding. I was like, oh no. And I just knew at that point it's gone. But it's half saved, and I tried like everything to recover these files. Audacity really
so
has a
you're not saving
horrible...
it locally first and then transferring it over to the
That's
USB.
What I should have done, but usually the USB is fast enough to like just save right there. Then I don't forget to transfer it, because if it's there, that's like a step that I can skip that I don't forget it here.
Right.
Not that it'd be a big deal to come back, but you know, it's just one of those things. But yeah, I don't know. Audacity's recovery process is a bit brutal. I even tried like using FFmpeg to like squeeze all the files together. Like I tried for 2 hours to get this thing to work, but it just didn't work.
Well, I guess sometimes that's just the way it goes.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Well, that's great. No, that's fortunate. That's our first technical.
Yeah. Knock on wood. There's no more coming up.
There will be, and we'll look forward to them. I think that's actually one of the things that, you know, I think growing up not being a developer, because when I was 2 years old, I wasn't really a developer yet. And I didn't know what that meant. And I used to feel really like stressed out that things weren't perfect all the time. So I don't know about you. Like when you were a kid, did you play with toys?
Oh yeah. Lego was my jam.
I loved Lego too.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I noticed, I don't know if it was particular about me from other kids, but I noticed like I really liked setting things up. So I'd spend a lot of time with like Lego. I'd make like a nice, cool looking scene, but I never really got it when people were like, you know, grabbing two toys and like banging them together or like clang clang. We're doing like, what was the point of that? But setting it up into some cool scene, that was like kind of my thing, I guess.
Yeah.
And So I mean, going forward, I always kind of had this like things have to be perfect the first time sort of idea. But with software, I feel like nothing's ever perfect. And that's kind of a good thing, because as you extract problems and as you extract the, because I think software often is made to solve problems. Mm. And so when you find a problem, you get a chance to solve it, and you get to use software for, you know, a solution rather than the cause.
Yeah, I think I would agree 100% for even things in like my general life. Like I always put my keys in the same spot. Like these are like small changes in my life that I've made that are like, oh, you know what? I keep having this problem. How do you solve it? On the computer, I would actually, you know, make a little program. So, you know, dry. I'd make my computer life completely dry. Don't repeat yourself. Mm-hmm. I would never want to repeat things. I make little scripts, blah, blah, blah. And in my real life, it's sort of like, oh, I should put my keys in the same spot. I should hang my jacket in the same spot. I should put my wallet in the same spot. For the case of the Audacity thing, oh, I'm always going to bring the USB that I like. I'm going to save it to this way. And then I can, you know, I've sort of, instead of, trying to necessarily like trying not to repeat the same mistake. It's more like, oh, I'm going to adjust my life so the mistake never happened in the first place. Yeah. Or I'll adjust my workflow accordingly.
I actually started something like that, like becoming a creature of habit is what I think in that case.
Yeah.
I actually started that. I was in Japan. And so in Japan, when you, and I guess probably a lot of places as well, but if you take the subway, you go on and you have a ticket. Mm-hmm. And you put the ticket into the... I'm not sure what you call it now, like the carousel sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. Turnstiles.
Turnstiles, thank you. And so you go in, and when you get out, you have to have your ticket so you can get out as well. And so I quickly started using the same pocket all the time. And that actually kind of changed my life, because then not only did I use the same pocket for that, I started using the same pockets for everything. And then I started also with, you know, always leave my wallet and my keys and my phone in the same place in the house and, you know, all sorts of things like that. But I was actually kind of interested when you mentioned dry. And I thought, don't repeat yourself. What do you think of that? I think oftentimes that it's an abused principle in a way. Not necessarily abused, but I think that let's imagine like in some cases you might have some code that's the same or similar that's copied over multiple, maybe multiple models have something that does something very similar.
Yeah.
Now, is it better to leave those things in those models or to extract them out as maybe a module that they can both share? And I think that that's like it's too vague of a question without right. giving context to answer it very well. But I think that there's a good case for both depending on the situation.
Well, I have an anecdotal sort of story about that. Like in PHP, you have these things called traits. Mm-hmm. And traits are there's a bunch of different languages have traits. But in PHP, the trait is basically like an implementation of copy-paste in PHP. So a lot of people make little traits, which are basically single methods. One that I often use was a method to convert a title into a slug whenever your title was set on a model, on the ORM. Whenever I set the title, always set the slug to a slugified version of the title. The problem was I also wanted to set a hash at the same time, so I had this trait that was nice, compact, two-line thing, five-line thing, but when it came down the road, it was like, oh, I need this model to actually have a hash, so I need to augment this trait. Should I add a hash? So that part, it was like, okay, well, now I'm splitting it. I tried to be dry, and now I have to split it up. But that was just like, I guess, still trying to like break it into parts. But I think it's like the approach initially was there, but then I had to basically undo it for one or two special cases, and then it just took completely. It's like, okay, well, there's two that use it, and then but there's eight models. But, you know, it's just kind of one of those things where I think it's like you kind of try it, and then if it just unroll it as you need to. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but that's sort of how I've approached that.
Yeah, I think it really depends. Like sometimes it makes sense to have things like in your case, maybe you had, you were making a slug, but you were doing it with particular arguments, or you also needed this hash.
Yeah.
And so that made it different enough that it should be actually, you know, two separate methods on their own models respectively. But I think that's just it. Like it's easy to say, you know, oh, dry, don't repeat yourself. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing it the right way, or quote unquote right way, right? And in that case, I think, like oftentimes I'll come up with quote unquote dry code that looks very smart.
Yeah.
And I think that for me, smart code is a bit of a smell.
Yeah, you kind of, you're trying to maybe be too clever. And I think that that's time. That's a lot of time where you introduce edge cases where you're like, I'm going to handle a case before it comes up.
Right.
And then you end up introduces a bug because you're trying to be like forward thinking or whatever. I think that definitely happens. But, you know, it's just one of those things that I think the more inexperienced you are, the more you try to do that. And as you become more experienced, you're kind of like you become more pragmatic. At least in my own experience, that's what I've become is that even thinking about zero tech, like, do I really need all this junk? Like just because it's cool and hip, or should I just go with the lowest common denominator and just focus on that and get that really well organized, really well, really working really well, or jump to the next thing just because it's the next thing. I think I've changed that way as I got more experienced.
How do you feel about inconsistencies in coding styles?
I don't really like them. I mentioned a couple of times that we're trying to find CI and CD at work so that when someone commits code, we have automatic things that run. One of the things I want to do is lint and format, because I just want us all to have like consistent style, because then no matter who you are and you jump into anyone's project, it can be pretty easy to get around, especially when you're linting things like method names. Are you using snake case, camel case, underscore case, whatever case you're using? It can be difficult to sort of intuitively find things.
Now, do you think that that's somewhat of a luxury, or do you think that that's kind of a must have? And I'll give you a qualification, I think, on that, which is I recall this one time hearing someone say something like, you know, oh, I know it's a lot of work to do, but I just don't have time to automate it.
that's
kind of an oxymoron.
Yeah.
it's kind of funny. And I think there's certain thresholds that you have to look at, right? Like if this takes me an hour a day of manual work to do, but it would take 8,000 hours to automate, well, then I've really got to evaluate, how many days is 8,000?
Yeah.
How long will I be before I start getting a return on that investment? And do I have 8,000 hours to throw up front?
Even though I think even one of the things that we use to eliminate like repetitive stuff, like you're saying, is to use something like chatbots. So instead of asking all the time where you find the handbook for vacations, you type in a little chat command and it tells you and gives you the link, or tells you how many hours you have left, which is like super useful. Instead of asking the HR person, oh, how many hours do I have left? How many hours do I left? Even just booking vacation, we can do it through Slack instead of pestering someone or anything like that. That took a while to set up.
Asking the HR person how much time
I mean, even like asking, or just even that idea of like seeing how many vacation hours you have with one line is super helpful.
That seems really cool. And I guess maybe like an API interface into I'm not sure what things are out there. And I think the best thing that I've used, and I don't know how great it is. I can't even remember what it was called now. But there was some, I was going to say GoToMeeting, and it totally wasn't GoToMeeting. But there was some sort of thing we used at ActiveState where we were scheduling our vacations. And so you could just see like when your vacation time was, how much time you had left at any time. Now, of course, you'd have to actually go to that site. But similarly, I mean, if you had to type in a command, I can't remember what it was. But what do you use for vacation scheduling?
We just have like a Google form and then it goes into a spreadsheet. Like all this stuff is sort of automatic. You book it. I think it goes in a spreadsheet. And then when you ask, it actually just queries the spreadsheet and tells you how much time you have. Mm-hmm. So it's very zero tech using like spreadsheets and like simple get requests and stuff like that. But as far as, you know, what it does, it's like it implements everything that we need.
I've noticed you often say zero tech with regards to like using some other third party library that it does that I wouldn't call zero tech. So like spreadsheets maybe, but you're using Google Drive and Drive spreadsheets. And this is, I think, far from zero tech.
I think it's, zero tech I'm not sure if it's a, like, I'm, I meant know, zero tech in the way that, file. Yeah. Well, I mean, that is a flat file, isn't it?
But it's also like over a network, over a blah, like over some sort of platform that's online that you also have some authentication.
So when
I think there's a lot of things in there that aren't necessarily zero tech.
So then what would you undo in that situation to make it zero tech? Because well, I mean, we couldn't actually implement anything.
The whole thing, rather than undo to make something zero tech, it's starting without.
So, but I mean, we wouldn't be able to get anywhere without the internet.
Okay. Well, that might
we wouldn't even be able to check our spreadsheet. It wouldn't work. That whole part is the crux of the starting point. That is the lowest point, is using the internet.
That doesn't necessarily require Google, for example, which is a given in this case.
Right.
That doesn't necessarily require spreadsheets either, which is also a given in this case. It doesn't necessarily require some sort of authentication and shared grouping system, which is also, I guess, a given in this case. And I don't mean that that's not some stripped down tech on top, but I mean, how much more bloated would using a different third-party system make that?
It's, I don't know,
not necessarily more or less.
I'm just saying
just using something that already exists isn't necessarily zero tech. And I think that's kind of the idea, because we see things like, oh, let's just pull in the jQuery library because I need a selector. And that's pretty anti-zero tech is what I would say.
It's still not clear to me when or if something is, it sounds like the lowest common denominator or the lowest implementation to someone is completely objective.
I think it's kind of maybe subjective in that, you know, it's like when you say zero tech, do you mean absolutely zero tech? So let's pull out
pen and
let's
paper
rocks. Let's pull out a couple rocks and bang it together. Or, you know, like, where are we actually starting with that? And I think for different people, their threshold of what qualifies as zero tech is going to be different.
I meant what I should have said, not objective, that I would think that this sort of using these very, very primitive services in their least capacity would be the lowest implementation. But obviously, you don't necessarily agree with that. So I think that, I meant to say it's not objective, and that you can't really say this is the way it should be, or this is more complicated than this. Mm-hmm. I think we had this chat with Matt about I had this little email backup thing, which just sent me an email with the backup in it. Mm-hmm. And that was it. It ran on the server as a cron job and sent me an email with a zipped database table.
Right.
And he was like, oh, why don't you use AWS and S3? Uh-huh. It's like, well, now I'm adding a dependency inside of there, as well as maybe I'm getting some things, version control, whatever you like to call it. But as far as I was concerned personally, the lowest implementation was sending an email, which I don't know if you can get any lower than that as far as like notifying myself about something, since it's like one of the oldest ways to send things around. But
yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. Like, I remember working with someone who's all about zero tech and was like, oh, well, let's just use like a Netcat server for this and blah, blah, blah. But then that same person was fine to say, push pin to get these notifications on your phone.
I've seen that.
So is that still zero tech now that we're using this kind of third-party online service?
I think it's
that
tough.
We don't know what's going on inside that black box. But then maybe that's the point that you're making as well. If we have this thing that we can treat like a black box, then it doesn't really matter how much technology is behind that scene. We're not using it. We're just interfacing with it. Mm. And so that becomes a piece in our zero tech framework, or our zero tech thing.
I wonder if there's correlation with time spent and like and complexity when it comes to like these approaches. Like, is zero tech literally the number of pieces, or is it the lack of pieces, or is it time spent versus time saved? I wonder if that's part of it, part of the recipe.
I think I would say it's somewhere like a sweet spot between complexity of your own code, maintainability, dependency, and understandability.
Right.
And so whatever that means, right?
So simplicity in like the broadest sense. You
know, oh, it's not zero tech because you're not writing the language yourself.
Right. Or like,
oh, it's not zero tech because you didn't design the circuit boards in your computer.
Or like you're using a cloud host, so all of a sudden it's not like you're not rolling a host in your basement.
Right. So I guess it depends on the domain, and it depends on probably a lot of things, but something that I'm not afraid to admit I would need more research to understand.
Sure. Maybe we can ask one of our upcoming guests.
Maybe. Yeah. All right. Well, I think it might be time for
meetups around town. All right.
Oh, all right. Yeah. So last week was a pretty interesting week. It was the last week of September.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you get up to?
So last week was startup week.
It happens
every September. As far as I know, this is like the fifth or sixth time, maybe.
I'm not sure if it was a part of Startup Week, but you were at a hackathon last week.
Yeah, it was
you?
The opening event.
Okay,
it was the
awesome.
Big event.
And how did that go?
Yeah, it was fun. Me
so
and
you
a guy,
teamed up
Adam.
With an Adam from, I think he's a co-organizer of the REST meetup, by the way.
Yeah, Adam Brzkailo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Try spelling that. So he's got a
background in what? He's got a BS in mathematics.
Yeah, he's big math background and a huge Go user,
mm-hmm.
As well as he's super into games and stuff like that. So we actually made this sort of gamified version of a geolocation app where you could visit different like casino games.
Cool.
So essentially, our idea was like, oh, we're going to use the Pokemon Go model and like implement it for gambling.
Yep.
Because one of the people that was sponsoring the event was the BCLC. So they actually had a prize for people that could come up with a new innovative way to do
sort
of games.
What is the BCLC?
BC Lottery Corporation.
Oh, I thought it was the Liquor Commission. And I was like,
why
would that be, have anything to do with
BC Lottery Corporation.
Okay.
Which is actually a company owned by BC, which I didn't really know, but just something that never came up. But it's interesting, or I like that the fact that they're out there like promoting these things, giving out prizes, trying to innovate, because then they understand that if they don't innovate, someone's going to innovate before them, and then it's going to be harder for them to, you know, there's only so much market and, you know, within reason. And if someone else comes in and starts taking it, well, then that's going to hurt them, right? So they realize competition is fierce, and they should come in and try to be one of the people that leads and create something cool and interesting. So I thought that was the speech that we got from the president of the company. So that was pretty cool to hear that and actually see them there and showcasing all the different things that they use and being really involved. And like the passion there was actually there. There was a bunch of developers. One guy built this like VR game, or this one team built this VR game. They're all playing. People from there, they're all crowding around, taking pictures. Like they were really into it, which was nice to see as like people that are, you might consider like a city companies or province owned things as, you know, old and slow and stuff like that. But they did not seem like that at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think traditionally, I mean, when we think of, you know, government or city services, I often think of educational games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like what kid is like, oh, mom, can I get that new, you know, educational game for my birthday?
Yeah.
Because they're usually lame.
Yeah, definitely.
Like they're oftentimes it's like they just they threw design and interest out the window, and they were just like, well, let's make something that's educational and let's market it probably toward the parents. Who can feel good about giving their child a lame game that's not fun to play. And I think that oftentimes we'll see that with government as well. Like, oh, we had to make something, so we painfully put it together and we hated every moment of it.
Yeah.
And so now you can too.
Or we contracted the cheapest person to do it for us.
Right. Whereas, but we had this obligation to do it, or rather nobody else was given a chance to compete with us, which I think is a kind of a horrible model, but it ends up with, you know, producing pretty poor quality things.
Yeah.
Whereas if, like you're saying, you know, we have this BC corporation that's, or I don't know if it is a corporation, but a BC
entity
that's here actually contributing and doing things that are hopefully sparking creativity and making some pretty interesting things. So, $1 million idea or what?
Not quite. Didn't win anything, but it was still fun. Learned a couple things. I was really happy with how quickly we could move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Adam was really awesome. He was able to like whip up this really quick API.
Yep.
And
so
then
you're
every
using
time,
Goa for that.
Right? Yeah, he was using Goa. Yeah, because he's a big Goa fan. And we were able to whip up an awesome little front end back end combo. And the thing that actually took us the longest to get going was the servers. For some reason, it just we kept hitting hurdles. Like
and
I tried
you were
to use
using Google's compute engine for
I tried to use that. We you saw me trying to get that thing up and going, and we just could not get it to go. No pun intended. So we're trying to get this thing to launch, and it was just it was a new thing that neither of us had used before.
Right.
And so speaking of like familiarity or trying to go with the lowest common denominator, it was like the curve was too steep to get that thing going. So I jumped to Elastic Beanstalk, and then the builds kept just failing whenever I launched, and I'm like, oh my god, I didn't know what was going on. So I ended up just using a DigitalOcean and with a Git script that would reset the server every time we pushed to the DigitalOcean box, and that worked perfectly.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I was even able to set up SSL on my subdomain over the course of 20 minutes to get the geolocation working on all browsers. So
that sounds pretty cool. Yeah. So I guess, definitely some familiarity with the domain is something to be said.
Yes, absolutely.
For that. Awesome. Yeah. Okay, so that sounds pretty cool. And what else did you get up to last week?
Last week, that was basically it. Just that finished on Sunday. It was pretty cool. I actually was feeling a bit sick. People probably noticed when I was talking in the last episode, talking over the missing piece, I sounded a little bit rough. That was because I wasn't feeling very well. So I actually ended up leaving a little bit early because I felt sick. So, and I knew I had to edit the show still. So unfortunately, I didn't stay too long, but I did read all the stuff about it after, which is pretty cool.
Hopefully you're feeling better now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. What about yourself? Anything exciting?
So I think last month, the only thing I got out to was Hackernest, and that was last week. And it was really pretty awesome. So we had it over at Wishpond, a great host for Hackernest, and probably any event. So if you're interested in hosting events, you might want to reach out to Jason Tam there, who also helps out with Hackernest, and that was awesome. And was a guest on our show, our only explicit version, I think.
Yeah, yeah, so that's pretty cool. Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. So we had, a pretty good turnout, and it was great talking to the people there. That's really one of my favorite meetups. Mm-hmm. It is my favorite meetup, and I'm pretty happy to be able to be a part of it.
Cool. All right. Let's continue with Monday.
All right. So Monday, we are starting out with our Git Help and Zero Tech meetup from 4 to 6 over at Decentral. I definitely bring a laptop to that and maybe some questions as far as, what exactly, where do we draw the line between, this is now one tech. It's not zero tech.
Yeah. Yeah. It's plus one. Yeah. I should go to this because I need some some education on what is or isn't zero tech. So
I don't know if that's obvious. Maybe it's me that needs the education on it.
I don't know.
So
we'll see if, I should go because I shouldn't just talk about something I don't understand. So,
all right. Then there's the Polyglot reading group. So Polyglot has a lot going on this week, and this is one of the things they have. Monday, they have from 6 p.m. Over at Stage 3 Systems, which is 220 750 Hamilton Street, the Polyglot Vancouver reading group. So what would you bring to that, James?
I think you'd probably want to bring the reading, if it's there, or at least some knowledge of what we're actually talking about. In this case, the subject is types and functions, categories, great and small.
Yeah, so there's actually links on the meetup. You can click down below to find it. Make sure that you have read the paper before you actually arrive. The discussion lasts for about 1 to 1.5 hours. So I'd say, whether you actually bring a laptop or not is totally up to you, but you're probably, depending on how you take notes, if you're really good at mental notes and you just remember everything, then you might not need to bring anything. But if maybe you write them down, maybe you have them on your laptop or whatever.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. We have a Decentral meetup coming up.
Yeah. So, is this Decentral, not Decontrol?
Yeah. I noticed that too. I think the first time we talked about them, the first time I found this meetup or this meetup group was that, this is Decentral's thing. And our website is actually decentral.network, which is kind of cool. But it says Decontrol, what you'd think of as control key, but DCTRL. And it says it's only shown to members, but I'm going to make an assumption that's at Decentral.
That's probably a good assumption going in. So I'm not a member of this either, but I think this looks like a really good, worthwhile meetup to attend. So this is a Monday from 6 p.m. and it's blockchain technology for record keeping, help or hype. I don't know why I had so much trouble saying that.
Yeah. And the presenter is actually Dr. Victoria Lemieux, and she's the Associate Professor of Archival Science at the University of British Columbia.
Yeah, and Steve Thompson.
Yes, they're a researcher for blockchain technology in general.
Yeah,
I know a couple banks and stuff sort of have been using this for ledgers behind the scenes, or like they're working on their next thing because the ledger capabilities of these things and the validation of each entry is kind of like really innovative and cool.
Yeah, well, we had last week our guest was talking about going through some public security things and then hiring on a couple of security experts and kind of bringing the team up to par and rebuilding things. I think it's something that we probably should spend a lot more time on as developers, is like becoming familiar with at least security best practices or where to look or who to talk to to make those decisions.
Yeah.
But this will probably be something at least worth attending.
Okay. We're jumping to Tuesday now.
Yeah, so Tuesday the 4th, we have Public Cloud User Group. So I'm really excited about this. This is one of my favorite meetups. I'd love to make it out to this one. This is over at CodeCore, 142 West Hastings. I've never felt like I needed to bring a laptop to this. It's always a very well-presented meetup with Matt does, I think, a great job of presenting, what's what in the past month of cloud.
Yeah.
And it's from 6 to 7:30 over at CodeCore. Bring a laptop if you want, but you definitely don't need one.
Cool. All right, the Vancouver UX Book Swap.
Yeah, this looks kind of neat. I don't know if you're anything like me, where you have a ton of books in your closet that you sometimes look at but don't often. Are you like that at all? Do you
have I don't actually have many computer books, not physical copies anyway.
Yeah.
Not that I could swap with anyone,
Well, there's the other thing. Would you want to swap them with anyone? I used to read a ton of books and, kind of swap them with people. But I realized, I remember giving a book to someone and, a month or two later, when they gave it back, the cover was like ripped off. And I was like, I always even though I'd read all my books and carry them around with me, I always keep them perfect for some reason.
Do you put book covers on? Like people used to put paper bags over top of their math books?
I don't need
to.
You see that
in high school. So to get to keep them in tip top shape.
Yeah, I used to do that as well. Yeah.
All right, Polyglot Vancouver.
All right, so Polyglot Vancouver, I told you they have a bunch of stuff happening this week, and this is another thing that they have on Tuesday. So they have their social from 6 p.m. over at the St. Regis. That is 608 Dunsmuir. Now, I wouldn't worry about bringing a laptop to this, but definitely bring an appetite for maybe something to eat, something to drink, and some conversation.
It does say it peters out around 10, so if you get there a little bit later, that seems like it'd be okay.
Yeah, I think this is definitely something that you could show up at, 7 or 8 or even 9 and still have a good evening.
Yeah, definitely.
And from 6 o'clock, also at CodeCore, we have the Vancouver Clojure Meetup. So if you're going to that, make sure to bring your laptop for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Be ready to hack on some Clojure stuff. Now, they do have Wi-Fi there. So even if you don't have things installed and you're just kind of, I don't know how beginner friendly they are, but I think they're a pretty good group of people and they probably would be pretty, Clojure beginner friendly.
Sure, definitely.
I hope so anyway.
Yeah. Now, a cool one that I haven't seen before, the RPG Game Dev Meetup.
Yeah, I thought this looked really cool. And I think that, most developers I know, I think, probably got into software development because they liked games at some point or another.
Yeah, definitely.
And probably thought, they wanted to develop some cool games. And then, for a lot of people, I think just software development became more fun than a lot of games anyway.
Sure.
So, But I think there's still the whole idea of, meet and team up with like-minded game devs. That seems really cool. So bring your laptop if you have one. Mm-hmm. There'll be a quick round table of the game dev we're doing. We'll see if anybody's a match to team up. It's fine if not a match. Just say so and keep checking. And you can bounce ideas off of each other and continue planning and working on your game ideas until you find somebody. That sounds really cool. So there's a cell phone if you need to reach the person that's masked in the locations only shown to members. And there's a limit to just 10 attendees. But guess what? Guess who's going? The organizer, Eric Muser, who was also a guest on our show before. He works at Mobify, and he's also a games developer. So
cool.
Sounds pretty awesome.
All right, and the first thing on Wednesday, the Vancouver Salesforce Developer Group.
Yeah, the Vancouver Salesforce Developers Group. So this looks pretty interesting. Also, another one of the only shown to members. Now, this is from 12:30 to 3:30, and it looks like it's kind of a viewing party for Dreamforce.
Yeah.
So Dreamforce is just around the corner. And unfortunately, not all of us will be able to attend in person.
So it is actually at 12:30 to 3:30. So this is sort of in the middle of the day. So if you're into Salesforce or anything like that, you should definitely check it out. I'm sure if you're into that, you probably know about this conference already, but you should definitely live stream if you haven't heard of it before.
Yeah. And so then we've also got from 4:30 to 6:30, the Vancouver Linux Desktop Meetup. Have you ever been to this one, James?
I don't think so. No, but actually, I'm thinking of getting a new laptop and this older one that I have, this 2011 MacBook. I want to put some Linux on there. So I think I'll be definitely attending soon with my favorite distro in hand.
Oh, that'll be pretty cool. So what is your favorite distro?
I actually had Arch on a Raspberry Pi for a while that I was playing with, and I actually liked it. I know some people think they call it like the scary one or the super complicated one. You have to build everything from source. Mm-hmm. I didn't find that to be the case. I didn't think it was that different. I did find that I didn't like the package manager, the Pac-Man, as much as I liked apt-get.
I was going to say that would be like, I haven't actually used Arch Linux, but the one thing that I thought I would really like is like Pac-Man.
Yeah, because you can type in Pac-Man every 5 minutes and update your stuff. Yeah. But it is interesting having bleeding edge everything, which I think is cool, especially with Arch. So, yeah.
All right, cool. And then we've got the Pluralsight Study Group from 5:30 over at P&I Digital Offices. That's 100-425 Carroll. Definitely make sure to bring your laptop to that and Pluralsight membership.
If you haven't heard of it before, you can check out our previous episode where we had Sam from Pluralsight, from the Pluralsight Study Group, on to talk about the group and as well as his company, P&I Digital.
Yeah. And then we've got the, from 5:30 to 7:30, YVR Testing. This looks like it'll be really cool. I always like their meetups. I think they're very well presented. And this is over at Sophus, which is 580 Granville. No need to bring a laptop. I've found to these meetups, it's usually somebody presenting, and then there's often go for a drink in a local pub after.
Yeah,
quite a nice social group. And I think that, like I said, the one thing that I've found a little disappointing about this group is that it's not as well attended by developers as it is by QA and testing people. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why. I think this is definitely one of the areas that there should be a lot of overlap. And I think that it's our responsibility as developers to care about testing,
definitely.
To care about QA. And I think that that's, it's a great meetup, and I think more developers should be there.
Definitely. And our last one of Wednesday, the .NET User Group.
And so this looks really cool as well. From 5:45 over at Microsoft, 1111 West Georgia, .NET User Group of BC. Would you bring your laptop to this? Is there anything that indicates that you should?
I probably would. One cool thing I noticed was that it's sponsored by Microsoft.
Well, sponsored by Microsoft?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense. I haven't seen them sponsor stuff before. I mean, obviously they're providing the location, but they're actually sponsoring it. I'm guessing that there's going to be a little bit extra fun stuff. They seem to put on some pretty awesome events whenever they sponsor stuff. So
there is a registration on Eventbrite, so make sure to click that. It looks like it's free general admission. I'm not sure. This kind of event, they usually do end up becoming full after not too long, so make sure to register for that. It's sponsored by Microsoft Canada. There are some snacks that are sponsored by that. And there's a speaker. I don't think you're going to need your laptop for this, because I think it's more of a talk. But if you do have one and you want to take some notes or whatever, I'd make sure and bring it.
Yeah, now we're on Thursday.
Yeah, so Thursday looks like another day of a lot of fun. So we got this from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. There is a conference in town that if you pre-registered before on or before Saturday, so last Saturday, then you would have gotten it for free. Otherwise, it's like $45. There is a code they have that you can get a discount for, and it is all uppercase, MeetUpFall16. 16 is numerical, and that'll give you a bit of a discount on that. But it does look like it'll be a pretty cool conference. It is free to attend for IT professionals, so maybe just make mention of that if you missed the...
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
The free registration period. Yeah.
Awesome. And now we have the UBC Drupal User Group.
Yeah, so this looks pretty cool. It's a little far out there over at Michael Smith Laboratories, room 101, 2185 East Mall. And it's from 12:30 to 1:30. But if you happen to be in or around the UBC area, definitely something to check out.
Yep.
And we've got the DDD CQRS ES Practitioners Meetup from 5 to 7. And this is happening over at D-Central Vancouver, 436 West Pender. This is always a lot of fun. Definitely worth attending. Make sure to check it out. If you were at HackerNest last week, we introduced Robert Reppel and talked a little bit about this group and said, you know, this is definitely something you should be at. And I think it made a lot of sense. Like, if you've ever had to work with software that you found was maybe poorly written, poorly maintained, hard to read, hard to reason about, and hard to understand, but you needed to actually use it and interface with it for some reason, then this kind of group is
definitely
some very experienced people with doing that who help to go over a lot of techniques for how to make dealing with legacy software I don't know about enjoyable, but
tolerable.
Palatable.
Tolerable. Yeah, okay. Cool. Another cool meetup by our buddy Charles, the Learn Data Science meetup.
Yeah, so this is from 6 to 8 p.m. It looks like it still needs a location. So if you've got a location, maybe reach out to the organizers of the group. Otherwise, the Learn Data Science meetup, this is pretty awesome. And I think this one is a Kaggle competition.
Yes.
It is Diagnose Heart Disease. Wow, that seems pretty interesting, especially these days with all of the IoT devices out there. I think this kind of stuff is becoming more, not just more relevant, but more possible to do.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. And then the Polyglot Vancouver meetup.
Yep. So a ton of stuff happening from Polyglot meetup group this week. So Thursday at 6 to 9 over at Mozilla's offices is Polyglot Vancouver Hack Study Mentor Night. If you got something to hack on, bring it by, work on it, write some code. If you want to help mentor some people on some code, then that's possible too. You can want to write it yourself or form a study group like on Coursera. Mm-hmm. Then this is the meetup for you. Starts at 6, ends at 9. Bring your laptop.
All right, and last thing, the Vancouver SharePoint Users Group.
The Vancouver SharePoint Users Group. And this location is also shown to members only. This is from 6 to 9 on Thursday, and it rounds out our meetups for the week. But this is, I would definitely bring a laptop to this, but it does say this. Are you an IT pro, but the world of SharePoint infrastructure is a confusing world? Are you a SharePoint developer and want your engineering environments to look like a production one without a lot of expense? Are you a SharePoint user and want to know what is going on under the hood of SharePoint to host it? So this is the session for you if you answered yes to any of those questions.
Definitely.
All right, and that's it for Meetups Around Town. And we're here with our special guests this week, Adam Dimitrik and Charles Ilya Krampo.
Thanks for the introduction.
Yeah. Are you a wrestler, so, Charles?
Yeah. You know, when I was actually in elementary school, I did plan to become a professional wrestler. I even had a name. I was going to be called the Nightmare. Didn't happen.
Yeah. I have an interesting question for you guys. So I kind of struggled with how I should introduce people, and I thought, well, I'll go alphabetically because we have two people to introduce. Is that fair?
That's
because if your name alphabetically is always going to fall into the same place alphabetically.
I've lived a life of privilege.
Yeah, it's like comparing people that were born in January, people that are born in December. Mm-hmm. There's no real difference. They're all the same year. Like, yeah. It's kind of dumb.
Yeah,
I guess it really depends. In some cultures, they actually go by an age that rolls over every January.
He's still older than me.
What's that?
He's older than me.
Yeah. Maybe next year we'll jump ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Age before beauty.
Yeah.
That's a good rule. You might be wondering why I had you on the show this time, but it was just because, you know, you're delightful people and I wanted to talk to you.
Cool.
Thank you. You're delightful people.
Nice. So we've actually had
also like to talk to
both of you on the show independently, but this time we wanted to talk a little bit about the Vancouver Tech Meetup. Getting it going, what its plan aims are, and what we're going to be doing. So we had maybe we can just kind of go around and say, you know, we're all involved in the Vancouver Tech meetup, and it has a plan to be a twice monthly meetup, one with a social component and one with more of a workshop style component. And the workshop style component has a few things that we'd like to touch upon, and that's, you know, have people in the community be able to come out and actually work together, work on stuff together. There's nothing more, I don't know if that's true or not, you can tell me. I feel like there's nothing more intimate than, you know, coding with somebody.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's one of our goals on our current meetup, the DDD CQRS one.
Yeah.
Switch to the format of 3 weeks, first week being something that's more, not social, but involves more of the business side of things for mm-hmm. requirements and seeing how business can invest in technology and translate all those business goals into specifications and how smooth that can be.
Mm-hmm.
Follow that up with a couple of sessions of actually doing that and getting a whole product out. So we just finished up a Salesforce project, which is a replacement, open source replacement for Salesforce.
Nice.
Which we're going to be dog fooding in our own company.
That sounds, cool. Yeah, really yeah. cool. Actually, that makes me think we should probably introduce ourselves for people who may be listening who don't know some
this
of the meetups
that we're
involved in.
This is their first time listening to the podcast, for example?
Maybe the first time listening to the podcast, or maybe even new to Vancouver, or you know, just happened to tune in from, Belarus.
Yes.
So Adam, maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself, some of the meetups that you do, and about what you're currently working on.
Sure. You probably covered it already in meetups around town. But mm-hmm. There's three meetups that I do. There's the Zero Tech and Git meetup. That's on Mondays at 4 o'clock, or actually it's moving now to a different time. I'll tell you about that in a bit. And then there's the Wednesday one. That's the desktop Linux meetup. That's all these things are decontrol, used to be called decentral. And that's at 4 to 6.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. And that's at 4 o'clock at decontrol. And then the most popular one we have, we might be needing to change the venue for this because we've been having people waitlist for the last 3 weeks in a row now.
Wow.
So we've been at capacity plus for the DDD CKRS ES meetup, which is advertised as the only place that you can actually code and get stuff done and have production ready kind of instruction. Like, you know, it's not going to be some example code in a Rails app that you're going to put together. Is going to have all the tenets of good architecture with CKRS.
I haven't made it out to that in the past couple of months. I feel really bad about it because I really love that meetup. And I think it's something that I can say, oh, I'm too busy with work to go. Yeah. But that's actually a lie. I'm not going, and I should be no matter how busy I am at work, because it's something that's going to be beneficial to what I'm doing.
Well, so this has had quite a profound effect, actually. Mm-hmm. I found out this week, just because of the amount of people that have been coming out to this, that mm-hmm. there are now a number of companies I didn't know were doing CQRS that are doing CQRS. There's Media VLA is doing it now. There's, who else is doing it now? PNI Digital. I couldn't believe it when I heard it that those guys would be doing it, but that's great. So
yeah, that's awesome.
All over the place, they're coming out of the woodwork. You can just find what we're teaching is actually being applied in different awesome. Companies around town. So it's a great success. Hopefully, in part due to our efforts to just have this going from beginning of this year. Mm-hmm. Those are the three meetups. I have a company, Adaptic Solutions, that specializes in that approach. And so we take on clients anywhere from a startup to people that have companies and organizations that have legacy code, or they just are swamped and don't have enough people. We can take on an entire project, product or service and get that done in a CQRS event sourced way, lossless data and other buzzwords you can read on our website.
Sure.
Yeah. I think you could actually shorten the name. Like the whole DDD CQRS.
I know. I've been criticized.
I think you should make it longer. I think you should use acronyms and just spell it all out.
Well, that's worse.
It's being advertised as the most horribly named meetup.
So Scott had a really nice name for it, the Vancouver School of Architecture.
I guess that's
actually a nice name.
I just
VSA?
Like that name.
Yeah, the VSA.
I just like it because it's kind of
school.
Yeah,
you get school.
It sounds
come
A
here
like
get
a school, and B like a school for architects.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think the name gives it this. It's so unique that
and it's very honest.
Recognize it.
But it's very honest. Yeah. If you dig into what those
I really
acronyms
like the
are,
name.
We mm-hmm. deliver exactly that and nothing more. Yeah. Nothing
I really
less.
Like the name because I think it's if it was Vancouver School of Architecture, which I think does sound like an elegant name. But I think it also has a limited subset of who would identify with that.
Subtitles.
Right.
Vancouver School
of
Architecture.
Emily Carr students coming by and asking.
Yeah, it's really difficult to give it a name like that that's so digestible because it's supposed mm-hmm. to apply. I mean, the only real criticism that I have is that it sounds technical. So the business people that we want to have there are turned away by the name.
Oh, yeah.
So we actively are very proactively making sure that project managers, product owners, CTOs, CEOs are wanting to come down to mm-hmm. to that meetup to see how they can have you know, their technology as an investment, not as a cost center.
And so you need a bigger space for that. How many people are you looking to accommodate?
I cap it at 20, and it's getting more than 20 for the wait list.
30, 40,
Probably like that. And we've looked at a couple of spaces.
So something maybe like Mobify or...
Yeah, so there's other companies that are planning on doing CKRS. There's some
spaces something might be an interesting space.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential ones. We do like the intimate setting and the underground feel of the control.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It does feel like you're in a part of a revolution.
I feel it's like being in your best friend's mom's basement, you know, growing up.
Exactly.
It's kind of cool.
So it's really cool that way. Plus, you know, all the resources there and just smart people that are doing blockchain and all a bunch of other stuff that are always in there. So it's cool that way.
Very cool. And so that's our guest, Adam Dimitrik. Charles, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? You're also very active in the community, have a lot of meetups going on, and are CTO of a pretty interesting company.
Yeah. So my background's in computer science and mathematics, with a bit of chemistry and physics. I've done software engineering for like almost 20 years. Some of it was data science. I realized later when they invented that name. So the meetups I'm involved with the most. So I organize the machine learning meetup and two different data science meetups, and one of them has like subparts. So there's stuff that happens over and over again. So the reading group happens every 2 weeks. It's on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. It's in SFU Venture Labs, which is in that big building with the flying saucer at top.
I've actually been meaning to ask you about that. So is that that building, the SFU campus on Hastings, I've found some of the meetups there don't have Wi-Fi access because it's something like $90 per meetup for Wi-Fi.
So it's not actually in the SFU campus. Like a lot of people got confused because we were there for a bit.
Yep.
So if you go just like if you're facing the building, if you go to the left of it, right, there's that tall building with a flying saucer at top.
Yep.
If you go up to the 12th floor, there's something called SFU Venture Labs. It is not the campus. It's a place that kind of like startups go and they develop their business, kind of like Launch Academy.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Okay.
So
it affiliated with SFU?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It is affiliated with SFU, which is why the SFU is.
Do you have Wi-Fi?
We do have Wi-Fi. They have a sign there when you walk in. You can get the Wi-Fi password. Nice. Very nice.
Isn't that a basic human right?
Honestly, like I'm really surprised that that's not like you a public service. That, right?
So there's another data science one that's very regular also. It happens on like weeks in between the reading group. That's the Kaggle competition. So the reading group is more like, you know, scholarly papers that you read, possibly books. We haven't done a book yet, but it's an option where you kind of like, you know, learn this kind of theory. The Kaggle group is more where you apply the knowledge you have. Like, okay, so this is like how you do like, you know, predictive modeling or classification or something like that. There used to be a beginner's group, something that, you know, gets you started in this. It's not existing right now, but I am going to be starting it up again. So there's that. There are also talks that happen around then. Because I've been involved with a startup, the one I'll mention in a bit, I've been a bit busy, so it hasn't really been going on, but there's actually 5 talks in the pipeline. So both data science machine learning talks are coming up. The social is also going to be restarted. So we used to have kind of a once a month social. Again, I got busy. Mm-hmm. So that's starting up again. So data science, machine learning are the meetups I'm involved with. So I'm also involved with a startup now called Coa Financial. It does money related stuff. The regulators... just to make them happy. Like, we are not a bank, definitely. They would be very upset if we ever said that. I do appreciate, like, you know, there's kind of conflict. Like, bank in, like, the legal definition, you know, those banks, trust, credit unions, and money service business. Mm-hmm. And we're a money service business that has a relationship with a regulated trust. And they, in turn, have regulation or a partnership with someone else that I can't actually say. But so there's that. And, but to a normal person, I mean, like, you know, what do they want? Like when they have a, you know, they're doing banking, right? Like they go and they have an employer and the employer puts, you know, their money into their account, direct deposit, and they might receive a check every now and then. And, you know, they might want to go spend on their Visa card or MasterCard, and they might want to pay for the rent using checks, and they might want to pay their bills. Most of them will pay on their Visa, but like BC Hydro and MSP Medical and your taxes, you can't. So you have to do that. So that's the experience we provide. So it's called Coa Financial. I'm CTO there. I think it's an awesome place to work.
So you've actually, you are hiring and you've hired on recently. I guess you're hiring seniors or potentially juniors. You hired recently some people from, or someone from a local boot camp.
Yeah.
How's that experience been?
Yeah, it's good. He's great. He's learning. His name is Eric, by the way. Mm-hmm. I think his nickname is Awesome Drifter. I don't know if I'll embarrass him by saying that. Yeah, yeah. I think it's supposed to be quasi-secret, but that's his nickname. So yeah, he's at Code Core. I went there for one of their demo nights. I went there and talked to a lot of people. He impressed me. So I got him to come for an interview, and there was a lot of juniors that we were interviewing, and he beat all of them. Mm-hmm. So, which is why we hired him, and he's learning quick. You know, I think back like when I got to school, and when you graduate, like you think you know everything. I thought I knew everything. And it's not until you go around people who are just as smart as you, mm-hmm. who have been doing this for a while, you realize, oh crap, there's a lot of stuff I don't know. Mm-hmm. Right. And like he's smart, he's learning fast, and I think he'll be very, very good in the coming years. So
nice.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, Charles, you mentioned the data science group, and Adam mentioned the connection between some local companies. Have you noticed the data science group bringing out people or companies that have actually gone to the meetup and really wanted to talk about what they're doing or anything like that?
Yeah, so more for the talks, you see that.
Okay.
So for the reading group, you know, there's people at companies involved, but a lot of it's kind of like personal growth. Like, you know, this helps me like learn this stuff. You will get individuals who, for example, they'll want to host the meetup, kind of like to bring awareness to their company. Like mm-hmm. think of a company's hiring, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, the first thing is you need awareness, right? Yeah. And part of that is you can have people host there, or you can have like, hopefully, you know, people working in your company go there and like, oh, our company exists, right?
Yeah.
Another part is like engagement, right? Like now that you're aware of us, okay, well maybe, you know, someone from our company will talk to you. It's nothing like, you know, slimy or anything. It's just like, yeah. Be aware of us. You know, you can see whether we're good or not just by talking to the people who work here. If you like them, you know, we're a nice place, right?
I think Sam from P&I Digital had the same sort of approach. Like they did the Pluralsight study group as a thing to like teach their own employees. And now other people can come and see them and check it out. And you know, there's no obligation to work there or anything like that, but it's a nice way to meet people in the community, see that there's bring that awareness around.
Yeah, we've actually been thinking about doing this in Coho. So we have an internal reading group.
Okay.
And the format we have is every other week, it's something I pick that I think is important for us to know as a company. The topic that we're going through right now is distributed computing. Mm-hmm. But weeks in between that, it's stuff that they just vote on. And it's just to keep it fun. And it just turned out they picked machine learning. And I do know there's an interest in the machine learning group. I've noticed on the Vantech Slack that some people there are interested in doing kind of like a introductory reading group. Mm. So that may open up. The problem is like right now we have ours at 3. So I might also create one that say at like, you know, 6 o'clock or something like that, the Coho office. And we'll just go through like, there's actually a series of books written by this guy, I think named Jeff Heaton. That I think is really good. I recommend it to like anyone with a programming background if they want to learn machine learning. It's called Artificial Intelligence for Humans.
Cool.
I think he did a really good job writing. And also there's some fundamental ideas that a lot of the machine learning books don't teach that he teaches. Like, you know, part of the challenge is figuring out how to represent your problem.
Yeah.
And if you can figure that out and, you know, put this on this model, then you can solve the problem. And he goes over that. He goes over like those fundamental data types of machine learning. Like if you're programming, you know, you have strings, ints, and floats. Machine learning, you have something called levels of measurement. So there's nominal, ordinal, integer, ratio data.
Yeah.
And, you know, like when you hear that, it's like, it's so opaque, like weird thing you don't know. But, right. You know, once you learn, it's like, it's just like, you know, ints, floats, and strings, right?
Cool. So. Okay. Because I know I've looked around at some of like the TensorFlow stuff that comes out as well as some of Facebook stuff. I'm like, oh, this thing's really cool. And they say, oh, it's so easy. And then you look at it and you're like, I don't understand any of this just because there's jargon that you that I don't understand.
Yeah.
Which is frustrating, but
yeah, once you like kind of learn the jargon, like it gets very easy. About I think back in 2006, I got interested in learning genetics. So, you know, I would read the blog post. I would try to read the scholarly paper. And it's like, oh, what the hell is all this stuff? Like, what's an SNP? Yeah. What's admixture? What's language disequilibrium? And I had no idea. After about a year, I got used to the language. And, you know, I could read the blog post. I could start to read the scholarly papers. So, you know, once you get past that barrier, like, it's a lot easier.
I assume that jargon is just like when you first, in your first intro to like, you know, any kind of language is that what the heck's a var and int and float and like you said.
Or even like Drew was saying the word dry, don't repeat yourself. Like, so there's going to be a certain amount of your audience that, you know, understands what dry means, right? And there's going to be a certain part of your audience, you know, who are just getting started like, what the hell is dry?
Yeah, they'll
right?
Google like, it.
Yeah.
So you also mentioned the Vantech Slack. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so there's a handful of Slacks in Vancouver where technical people can go to. Some of them are more software engineering focused. Some of them are software engineering plus, you know, data science plus other stuff. Vantech is kind of more generic. It is, there's a lot of software engineers there, but it doesn't exclude data scientists, for example. And there's quite a few of them there. There are some product managers there also. I actually think product development is something that it would benefit software engineers to learn. Mm-hmm. Actually, product development, marketing and sales. And like the thing is, people hear that, like, oh, that's gross, I don't want to do that, right? Mm-hmm. They have like a disgust response. But like those topics done properly are very data-driven, algorithmic. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, there's marketers who you'll meet who will say like, oh, you know, you can't like measure what I do, which is just nonsense, right? You can, right? Like,
that's exactly what marketing is.
Yeah, yeah. You can measure like A-B tests, right? And yeah, there's both qualitative and quantitative things you can do.
Yeah.
I think software engineers would actually excel at that. And I think they'd like it as long as they approach it from the data-driven algorithmic point of view.
Mm-hmm. I've implemented like evented stuff as far as like tracking goes with different sites. And it is interesting, like you said, to like, okay, I have this special scenario that's going to occur, and I need to fire a unique event for the series of tasks that happen. How do I do that? So there is like a fun and sort of gamified way that you're doing this. Okay, they clicked on this dropdown, they clicked on this menu, then they went to this, then they resized their browser. Like, you can track all those things and see all that stuff. And you can change your site based on the data that you learn. So it's very cause and effect sort of approach to everything. And I think about something like the Obama campaign, the first one. They were hailed by all these people about how amazing their campaign was.
Yeah.
And they were doing things like changing the color of a button like constantly. And they actually managed to increase their engagement by like 60% or something wild like that. Just by these small tweaks, incremental tweaks over months and months and months. And eventually they had this optimal, you know, the computer-driven model of what their site should be. And, you know, that translated into literal votes. And in cases of places like e-commerce, like literal dollars. We know Amazon does a lot of testing on speed and design and related items and stuff like that. It's all science-driven, like data-driven.
Yeah, so exactly. So those are great examples of data-driven algorithmic marketing, right? Mm. And you can find the sales. Like, so there's one book. It's written by a Salesforce guy. I can't remember the title right now. I didn't read the whole thing, but I read a bit of it. Mm. And we start reading it. Like, the book basically says, when you're doing sales, use data. And, you know, if you come from like, you know, computer science background, software engineering background, or like data science background, you're like, you know, no kidding, right?
Yeah.
Like, but if you don't come from that background, like, that's totally an alien thing. You don't think of it. Mm-hmm. But like, this is like, you know, part of the thing. Like, if you come from this background, like the software development background or like data background, like that stuff, like done properly, you'll actually like. Mm-hmm. So, and it'll benefit you. Like, if you ever want to start a company, like being able to understand all that, like, not necessarily, you don't have to do it yourself. There's maybe in the beginning, right? But being able to understand for that, to hire for that, to like build a company for that, like, is really beneficial.
It's actually really simple. It doesn't require a lot of high tech to do that. I went to an interesting talk at the Startup Week, I think in the middle of the week, this last week. So one of the speakers said, yeah, that one of these earlier metrics is don't throw everything in marketing as a $10,000 campaign. Have 2,500 go to, you know, four different avenues or less, or 1,000. And then see which one has the better response, and you measure that. So these are
exactly,
you know, common sense things. You know, you don't have to be scared by all this data talk. Just means getting feedback on how effective things are and keeping count of what works, not just blindly trudging forward like some people see sales.
So I would agree that those things are important, but I would claim that a lot of people in marketing don't know that and don't do that.
Yeah, that's why it was part of the subject in this talk.
Yeah.
Especially for startups.
Let's hop back over to the to VanTech a little bit and about the Vancouver community and about the Vancouver Tech meetup as well and what we're planning with. So one thing that I thought was pretty interesting, so the VanTech Slack, this has existed for quite a while. What when did you, I guess you created it, Charles.
Yeah.
When did you first create it?
So it was actually a little before I joined YVR Dev.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the exact date, but it was around then.
Yep.
So yeah, whenever that was.
So this is maybe 6 months or a year ago, something like that.
So, yeah. So however long, whenever I used to be on this IRC. So there's Van Dev Ops IRC. Mm-hmm. And like the people involved with like broadly speaking Polyglot run that.
Right.
And you know, they love it. I go on there. I don't really like the interface of IRC much.
Mm-hmm.
I like Slack. So eventually I discovered YBR Dev and I was like, oh, this is great. And you know, I promoted it. I noticed like there's a bit of a flood of people that came over there.
Mm-hmm.
And then for various reasons, eventually I don't hang out there anymore. And I hang out in Van Dev now.
So that's kind of interesting. Yeah, there was that it seemed to get really popular, and then there was some fragmentation. And we have now, there's a couple of joint channels, joint Slack or joint teams on those channels as well. So we've got the Van Dev's channel, which has, I guess, about five or six different of the local Slack teams, and some more maybe to come. And we have also the shared contracts and jobs. There's some of the other ones like the Unix and Rust, but so that's kind of neat. What do you see? What do you think about those joint teams? Is that something that's good for Vantech, for YVR Dev, for maybe CodeCore Slack, or for some of the other Slack teams that are on
there?
I think it's
wonderful. It's like a demilitarized zone. So I think already there was some kind of code of conduct issues, because one of the differences mm-hmm. with Vantech is that we don't have a code of conduct. We mm-hmm. expect people to have an implied code of conduct and behave themselves, whereas some people want that safety net of actually having something written down.
Okay.
And you know, for various reasons, people might go on one or the other. Mm-hmm. I have my reasons for being on one side, and so does Charles. But you know, there's that great interface that there's that demilitarized zone in the middle mm-hmm. that you can have both sides come in.
And, so yeah. Does that mean that there are no admins on Vantech?
No, there's admins.
Yeah, there's admins.
Technically.
Yeah. But I don't think it's ever come to any use of that. Mm-hmm. Unless I think there might have been some spamming for some okay. jobs or something, but that's expected.
There has been some conversation in the shared channel, the Van Dev's channel recently, where some people were saying, you know, why don't we have a unified Slack? And I don't know. I wonder, does the joint teams channels, does that not already stand as a unified Slack?
It does. I think it does anyway. Mm-hmm. If someone is very militant about only interfacing in a place where there's code of conduct, well, mm-hmm. I'm not sure how they can walk down the street and feel safe.
So what do we think about the tech scene in Vancouver and the Vancouver community? I feel like, so I've been back in, I grew up in North Van, but I've been back in Vancouver for the past, I guess three and a half years now. And I feel like our community is coming more and more together. We're having more interesting events. We're kind of growing. But does that also mean we have different groups and segregation and things like that?
You can't centralize too many people. Plus, I think mm-hmm. it's just the growth of the industry.
Right.
You know, all companies are becoming software companies. So mm-hmm. you're going to have people that need technical knowledge. And you're going to start to see people that want to engage in community via you know, taking a course somewhere and noticing that there are groups, whether that be study groups, that then reach out to different mm-hmm. meetups, et cetera. So
yeah.
It's just a natural progression. And I think trying to centralize something, while good, at the same time, it can become quite noisy. There's another group that I'm part of out of Toronto, and it's incredibly big. I mean, mm-hmm. Toronto's huge compared to Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And if you can imagine a Toronto Slack, that like YVR Dev or Vantech, I just can't keep up. It's brutal.
It's something I often think about like the channels centralization versus yeah. decentralization. And I think, you know, like we even see that you could say, you know, what is Git better than SVN? And I think it like empirically is.
Yeah. So,
but does GitHub, help Git?
There's a popularization aspect, but at the same point, what's needed at what point in time?
Mm-hmm.
There was a specific point in time that Git needed the popularization, maybe. I don't know if that was necessarily true.
Mm-hmm.
I think it helped, but I'm not sure if it was necessary.
Without
GitHub, I think we would have had other things in there. I think there was many other players. I think the marketing behind GitHub was very, very good.
So where do you see the Vancouver Tech Meetup going, and what sort of things do you personally want to bring and contribute to it?
I think, so I mean, like there's different issues you have like with people as they go through their career, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, like think of someone in the beginning, and like for me, like it's been a long time, and you kind of forget some stuff. But it's like one thing I've noticed is that when people start off, like they don't have a sense of like what they need to learn. They don't have a sense of like how to get started with the stuff, right? So mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, there's a social aspect, and like Vancouver is very much a who you know city. Like it just is, and more so than I'd say like a lot of parts of the world. So mm-hmm. you know, having the social aspect, you know, so many people now, but given you have the social, you can know more people. So great, but also like, you know, your skills are going to matter. And you have so many skills now, and you might not know what you need to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And having a place where you can do like workshop style stuff can help you learn those things.
Sure. I think that's actually really important. What about, do you think that as a tech leader, and I think I can consider you a tech leader if you're, you know, you run meetups in the tech scene, you're CTO at a company, I'm assuming you're responsible for hiring people as well. Are you structuring your company and your day-to-day job in a way where you're claiming some or taking some responsibility for helping to develop that next generation of developer.
Yeah. So we
similar question to you, Adam.
Yeah. We've actually, this is interesting because this actually came up recently. Like, for us, like, you know, there's a motivation for like the company, right? Mm-hmm. Like for the motivation for the company, it's okay. We want to hire. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, and we're going to hire somebody now and we're going to be like, you know, hiring somebody next year and the year after that and the year after that. So what can we do for this? Like, we need people to be aware that we exist. Mm-hmm. We want people to be engaged with us and we want people to know that, you know, our place is a great place to work at. Right. So mm-hmm. how do we do that? Right. And part of that is, you know, having a presence at meetups, like going, giving talks, going, helping people learn, going, doing all those things that let people know that, you know, Coho is a great place to work. Mm-hmm. So like for us, part of it is to go out, give talks, you know, help people out, give workshops. I have been looking at doing practicums also. That needs to be studied a bit more. There's some legal things around like practicums I need to figure out. And maybe some relationships I'll need to set up with various schools, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And Adam?
We kind of have a different company because we're sales and, you know, kind of consulting oriented for a specific approach. Mm-hmm. So
I think the question still stands.
It does. So we have to have a more global, just because the niche kind of approach, at least it is a niche thing. I think in 2 years it won't be very niche. I mean, you already have mm-hmm. Redux and Flux showing the, you know, first steps. They cite CKRS and event sourcing mm-hmm. as the inspiration towards mm-hmm. their circular unidirectional binding stuff.
Vancouver school.
Yeah. So I mean for in terms of how it ties, there's plenty of people that are capable of doing this in town. It just takes a bit of practice to do that. So mm-hmm. you know, we have
as far as taking responsibility for helping to build and grow the tech community and to help people coming into it and to build that next generation of developers.
I mean, we're solely trying to do that through the meetup. Mm-hmm. It's just there's very few of us. We're not a big company.
Right.
In terms of Vancouver people, we have some advisors that are spread around the world and some other people now in Seattle that are other consultants mm-hmm. Come up here from time to time that are very, very skilled and do that. So we're probably going to have that. Kelly is a guy that we're working with now out of Seattle, and he'll be coming up probably on a once a month basis to partake in the meetups as well.
Nice.
He's done an incredibly large you know, rollout of CKRS.
So when it comes to some of the workshop topics that we have, we've talked a little bit, and we have that we have some open docs on GitHub for the structure of the meetup, and we said, you know, a little thing, things like common interview questions or maybe some design patterns or
For us, it's in terms of junior people, we're just looking for smart people. It's so hard to find questions that would vet people really well. All we're looking for is people that are inspired and hungry mm-hmm. for knowledge. We find that people that are going to be good at CKRS and event sourcing really see that they can, that they're capable of making leaps and bounds if they put some effort into it, and they're also
so how would that tie into a Vancouver Tech meetup workshop topic, I guess, is my question.
I don't know if you can talk about motivation as a topic for a technical meetup. So it's something that just for, at least for how I run the company, mm-hmm. It's a lot more organic and is based because it's such a small sample size that I have to treat every single of these interactions as a special case. They have to fit fully. It's not like I'm interviewing possibly, you know, get a stack of 100 resumes that I have to write.
Well, so the question that I'm actually asking mm-hmm. is what sort of topics would you like to get out of and have and present potentially at the Vancouver Tech meetup? And so something from my point of view, for example, maybe to kick the ball, get the ball rolling, would be so in our company, we're currently hiring. And so I put together a coding challenge, and I think the motivation in putting it together was let's try and get something that's as representative of what we're actually dealing with as possible, but to also give us something that like we understand what the goal and motivation is, we can give to somebody, we can look at and we have a conversation piece for engaging with them during an interview. And so what we came up with was, okay, let's write a back end and a front end that communicate with each other and provide a login system.
Yeah.
And all of the choices as far as, you know, whether to use a database or you know, write to a flat file, whether to use any sort of authentication or not, whatever, it's all completely up to you, whether to write tests, whatever. Yeah. And so we left that all open-ended, and we thought that might help to give a conversation. But on the other hand, some feedback that I'd love to have from other people who are in positions of interviewing and interview Ying, you know, would be, yeah, I'd love to get some feedback on that. Is it too much of an ask? Is it too open-ended? Should we have tighter lines? Why? You know, would
it's
we be
so, it's so hard for us because it's stuff? Like the people that are really good at the CKRS event sourcing stuff had to go through many years to get to that level. With the amount of available material on the subject there right now, it's certainly less. But it is more like a craft. Like, how do you interview, you know, I don't know, a stonemason?
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's, it's kind of getting to that.
Well, that's also, that's saying, so in your case, that's, you would be interviewing for highly specialized, I guess, in those areas. But that's interesting. That might show the, you know, the immaturity, I guess, of your current company, in that once you get to a certain stage, you'll be able to look for, you know, like-minded individuals that you could take on and teach these things to if you were set up.
Well, there's
that
two
way.
Things. There's two problems for a growing company. My company is just a year old, right? And so we've grown as much as we responsibly could in that time. And part of it is getting the inertia of the knowledge base and having a lot of patterns to be able to address business. And we have with you know, a few successful clients so far, which is great. Now to be able to onboard people that are. That we can, you know, mentor and teach and all that's happening. We have a really
and a huge part of
actually Paul, you know, from CodeCore, he's working out to be an amazing guy.
That's
that,
really
that
good,
knows quite a lot of stuff and is one of these people that's just naturally curious and, you know, will recompile his own Linux kernel to have a little latency stuff for all his audio stuff. Like, that's wow, really cool. You know, the guy's not even 20. This is awesome, right? Nice. So it's
I guess a big part of the CQRSDDD. DDD CQRS ES practitioners meetup is already doing that. It is already doing that mentoring or engaging, you know, with people at all levels.
We certainly leverage the community for just seeing who's interested, et cetera, and who's going to come by. And one of those was Paul as a hire. So it's very organically grown. We don't hold any traditional interviews whatsoever. It's if you're interested in working with Adaptec, you come to talk to any number of us and see. You know, we just ask you why, and here's a project, and how you can get.
So, I guess same question for Charles then. what do you see yourself getting out of and contributing to the Vancouver Tech Meetup, and what sort of topics are you interested in?
Yeah, so like I think for the VanTech, like the target audience is people earlier on in their career, so it's definitely focused towards that kind of stuff. Like, what do you need to learn as you know go on your career? For us, like, you know. Coho is going to be hiring at different times and like, you know, just having a presence there is useful in that, you know, you increase your network and maybe there's someone like at the time you're hiring, hey, we're hiring now. Oh, I know this person there. Right.
Why do you think it's particularly geared for people early in their career?
The meetup?
Yeah.
Because, okay, so, you know, you start off and there's a lot of unknown unknowns you have. And I think one of the differences that goes is like you get older is like there's going to be a lot of stuff you don't know, but you know that nobody else knows it. You don't know that when you're young. Like a lot of like
I think there's others that know it.
I've even seen people get embarrassed. Like they don't want to mention they know don't know this thing, and they don't realize that like okay, none of us know this.
Yeah, right? That was actually at our daily standups at Active State. Like one of the first, I think the biggest breakthrough that I came with came to was being able to say I have no idea what I'm doing, but if anyone has any expertise on this, come pair up with me. Yeah. And after saying that and having nobody come up for enough times, I was like, hey, nobody else knows this stuff either.
I think there's a certain confidence people get as they get older because they become much more aware. Like these become known unknowns. Right. Like I don't know it, but I know no one else does, right?
Well, I think that's a huge aspect of it. But I think the other thing would be I think you can often get into a position, I think, where you're saying, you know, you're comfortable in that, but have you vetted it with other people who are in similar position? Yeah. You know, and I think the one side would be, you know, the person going to the interview has to be able to pass this interview. So knowing what the people on the other side think or what they're expecting is one thing that you could get out of it. But on the other side, like, I think the more that you know, the further away you are from that entry level or from that junior dev. And I think being able to reconnect to you as a junior dev and to maybe be able to help that next generation to overcome some of the hurdles that you had to, but maybe in better ways.
It might be useful to spend some time talking about like when people interview, right? Like,
absolutely.
Like one thing to remember is like, any kind of test you give, like including an interview, is a test. Like, it's not going to be perfect. And you're going to make one or two different errors. You're going to even make what's called a false positive, false negative. So I'm either going to like have a test structure in a certain way that I'm going to say, okay, these people didn't pass, but they were actually good, right? This is a mistake. I made a mistake. These people actually, we should have hired them, but we didn't. But the people we hired, actually, we just got good ones, right, in general. Or you can have the test work the other way, that we're gonna like hire a whole bunch of people and a bunch of them aren't going to be good. We're going to make that kind of mistake, right? So the false positive. Companies in general are willing to make false negatives. Like, these people were good, we rejected them, right? Yeah. So just keep that in mind. Like, if you don't get hired a place, like, it can really be nothing on you. Your skill could be fine, right? Like, it has nothing to do. Don't get discouraged, right? So like when I you know, we have different stages that we do this, and because we're so small, like, one thing we really, really care about is culture. And culture is a very nebulous thing. I think it's different for every person who gives that test. Like, it's basically like, something about him didn't sit right with me. Like, it can be sometimes. Or it can be like, you know, specific things we're looking for. Like, does this person look really self-motivated?
Well, I guess when you're hiring for culture, what you're really saying is, does this person bring out something better in me?
Sometimes. But I think there's other people who mean very, very different things. And I think there's a chance you might think it means the same thing everywhere. And it's like, I'm trying to figure out what it means. And I don't think it's the same. I think every person who says culture means something different.
Yeah, that's a pretty good, I think, good point to bring up. And on that note, we keep running out of time. Both of you, we have so much to talk about, but we're going to have to call it for today. Thank you very much for being on the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
See you again next time.
Thanks.
See you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Check out our website, vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Rate and subscribe on iTunes. Much appreciated.
You can follow us on Twitter, VanTechPodcast.
Feel free to leave some comments below.
You can also hit us up on the YVR Dev, the Vancouver Tech, the VanTech Slacks. I'm at James.
And I'm at Drew. Special thanks to Same Room for hooking us up with an integration that allows us to have a cross-team Slack channel, VanDevs.
Do you have a meetup that you want us to plug? Email us, show@vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Music by A Shell in the Pit from the game Parkitect. See you at one of the meetups
around town.